I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and welcome to today's Thursday edition of Radio Boston. Now, over the years, we've talked to a lot of Boston area college presidents on the show, and we usually do the interviews in their offices. Come to think of it, we could do an entire series focused exclusively on what those offices look like, whether they're in historic halls or glittering modern buildings, big oak desks, tall windows, and insignia-stamped university merch seem to be de rigueur. But I'm here to tell you that when it comes to the view through those tall glass windows, Suffolk University President Margaret McKenna is hands-down winner. High above Tremont Street, McKenna looks down on the golden dome of the Massachusetts State House, so close you could almost touch it.
You know, everybody knows the story. The graduates, you know, a third of the state legislators, you know, have Suffolk degrees.
Margaret McKenna began her tenure just last month. She's Suffolk's first female president in the university's 109-year history.
You know, you can go any place in town, the law firms, business industry, nonprofits, Suffolk alums are everywhere. And I think that creates a particular responsibility for a university to create an environment that educates people extremely well with the sort of skills, knowledge, and sense of responsibility to give back to a community. You know, I run another university close by, Lesley, and there are a lot of us in this town, right? I always used to say it's harder to get a good plumber than it is a college president in Boston, because we're, you know, there's a lot of us. And but there aren't too many that are right in the center of things, and whose graduates, for the most part, stay here.
McKenna's own path to Suffolk was a bit different. She was president of the Walmart Foundation from 2007 to 2011. Prior to that, she served for 22 years as president of Lesley University. She's also former VP of Radcliffe College. But it's her legal career that's really most interesting. Back in the 1970s, Margaret McKenna was a young civil rights lawyer with the Justice Department, traveling around the country in her Ford Pinto, as she recalls, suing cities for race and gender discrimination. It tells you a lot about who McKenna is. Take, for example, a lawsuit she brought against the Baltimore Police Department, which at the time had exactly zero women on the force.
The police chief at the time testified that there was no way that women could be police officers because they were little balls of fluff. Yeah, that was a story that stayed with our division for a long time, especially with us who were little balls of fluff.
So, first lesson about Margaret McKenna. She's more steely will than ball of fluff.
So I was suing companies and cities for discriminating against basically race, but then gender. A lot of police departments and fire departments. Dallas, Fort Worth, Miami. I was one of the lawyers who sued the city of Memphis for race discrimination. So I was involved with the sanitation workers, Martin Luther King. Remember Martin Luther King, where the African-American guys were picking up the garbage and the white guys were driving the trucks? Mm-hmm. I was followed that, was in a suit in Memphis, sued the whole city for race discrimination. And I remember the fire department, where they had, believe it or not, had a black bed rule.
Meaning
that if you had one African-American fire employee, fire person, men, they were all men at the time, you had to have three, because only African-Americans could sleep in the and use the African-American bed and equipment. I know you're shocked, but that was at one point a rule and then still a custom.
So what drew you to that line of legal work?
I went to law school to do that. I grew up in the 60s, right? I was part of the women's movement, part of the Vietnam War protest movement. I was one of those folks who truly believed that you could change the world and you had to. the only place I applied was the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department under the Honors Program. So it was pretty calculated in terms of what I needed to have to put me in a position to affect the things that were important to me.
Second lesson about Margaret McKenna. Effecting change in a tangible, relevant way is a deep personal value of hers. Inspired by her youth in Rhode Island, where she grew up with two parents and four aunts who were all public school teachers.
And everybody expected I would become a teacher because that was the family business. And I totally resisted. And then look what happened, right? Yeah. In fact, you know, all my years when I went to law school, you know, I was in the White House, and it wasn't until I became the president of Leslie that my family finally said, oh, thank God.
It felt like it took you long enough,
took you long enough to figure out what you were supposed to do in life.
Third lesson, in the McKenna family, mission mattered.
They were just community activists, and I didn't even know there was another choice.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I have one sibling. And she's a Roman Catholic nun.
Okay.
I'm not sure she ever knew there was a choice other than that.
So you can start to see the threads of Margaret McKenna's life coming together here and coalescing at Suffolk. Education, activism, civil rights. They're all a good fit for a university that was founded in a Roxbury living room in the early 20th century with the express mission of educating Catholic, Jewish, Italian, and Irish Boston immigrants who were refused admission to the city's other colleges.
That's a history I'm proud of. I'm proud to be part of that because, you know, the graduates here back 50 years, those folks who came out of Roxbury and Malden and Revere, you know, they've changed Boston. You know, they're in the state legislature. They're the leaders in the industry and business here. They're the leaders of the nonprofits. Suffolk has been such a point of access and change in this community. It's amazing.
But it's time now to get down to business. McKenna knows that Suffolk needs to change. Even though the university went through a major upheaval 4 years ago following the stormy departure of former President David Sargent, he retired abruptly amid outrage at his $2.8 million annual salary. McKenna receives $650,000 in total compensation today, and she says she's focused on increasing the university's $195 million endowment and redefining its mission.
This institution needs to be able to change with the times. So academic institutions have a difficult time doing that. I'm not sure you know that. But.
Oh, yes. They are very big and slow ships to
They're very
to
big
change.
And slow ships yeah, to change. Move. And this one is much better than most. So my goal here is, you know, that the people in biotech come in and say, you know, we have jobs we can't fill. And this is what we need, and we respond.
But practically, what does that mean? Because, I mean, at Leslie, one of the things that you did is you, when you were president there, you closed the business school there.
That's
because
true.
It just, because you had been quoted as saying that you don't think that schools should, or universities should have schools that aren't as good or better
That's right.
than their peers.
Right.
And that's what you saw with the Leslie Business School.
Right.
Do you think there'll be the need for that kind of streamlining or change here at Suffolk?
Well, I'm not closing the business school here.
Okay.
The business school is, in fact, the business school is one of the exciting pieces here because there's a great center on entrepreneurship here, which connects to the law school's intellectual property program, and you put those two together. That's an incredible jewel here.
Tell them to solve the problem of patent trolls, okay?
Well, exactly, exactly. And that's a real challenge, and it's a real need in Massachusetts to have those two connected. And now the business school is actually physically with the law school as of this year. So, yes, do we need to focus on what we do well? Absolutely. And will there be programs here that won't be here a year or two from now? Yeah, they will be. What will they be? I don't know. What we certainly need to do is we need to allocate or reallocate our resources to the things that we are excellent, where we have excellence, and the things that are needed. So if there are people who do things much better than we do, and there's not a market, there's not a need, then we really got to look hard at what we do.
Well, so this is really fascinating because, you know, I would say a generation ago, the thought was that the mission of a university is to open students' minds to the universe of possibilities, right? The universe of ideas and whatnot, that it didn't necessarily have to meet any sort of market need.
Right.
Right. But that's, you're not the first college president to say what you're saying, that maybe we ought to be thinking about mission differently now,
right,
when it comes to higher ed.
Right.
So what would you say is, you know, if not the specific mission of Suffolk, but the mission of universities when it comes to educating their students?
Yeah. So I don't think there is a mission of universities. I think there's a diversity of mission, and there should be. So there are people who are interested in the classics and a classic traditional liberal arts education, and there are places that need to do that. And there are students who want that. We are not that. It's important to know what you are. It's important to know what you want. One of the strengths of U.S. higher education is its diversity. You know, we have the only housing discrimination clinic in the country at the law school. And we need to pay attention to the housing issues in urban centers, right? We have an interior architecture, you know, it needs to be looking at those urban issues, right? So, I mean, there are so many pieces of what we do is we're of the city. We need to show that urban centers work and that we're a partner here that can make this work. We want Marty Walsh and Charlie Baker to, when they've got an issue, to come to us and help. We can figure out how to, with the data and the research and the expertise that we have, to help them figure it out.
So there's a set of questions that I've asked every college president that we've talked to in the past couple of years, and that of course has to do with the cost of higher ed.
Yeah.
And Suffolk is one of those universities where most of the budget is paid for through tuition dollars.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it costs a lot, not just at Suffolk, but you know, for students in general. I mean, do you have ideas or thoughts about how to get a handle on the spiraling cost of higher ed?
So first, we need to take care of the interest rates that students are paying. We need to think of way for loan forgiveness in terms of help from cities and towns and companies. We need to have the federal government step up and pay more for students unable to pay. So the Pell Grants need to be larger. We also need, as universities, yes, to contain costs. There's no question about that. I think we can do better. It's something I will look at here. There's no question about. There's been a significant movement in higher education from need-based aid to merit-based aid. And while I understand that you want to attract and reward students have done really well, but I think we need to think very hard about the proportion of aid we give in need and merit. And I think the balance has shifted very significantly in ways that are not helpful to the students who need the financial support to manage to come and stay in college.
Is there a way to look at the issue through a civil rights lens?
Well, it's a both class and, unfortunately, class and race get related. I think the civil rights lens starts earlier because we have an achievement gap in this country, which is unacceptable. You can relate every SAT back to a zip code, back to a wealth gap. Your ability to do well in school should not be related to your income, but it is.
Yeah.
It basically is. And, you know, and the interesting thing is we know what to do, but we don't do it. We know that early childhood education, every dollar we put in pays $11. We save $11 in the economy, but we don't do it.
So, final lesson about Margaret McKenna. Talking about change without actually doing anything about it isn't really her style. And at least for now, students and faculty at Suffolk seem to be excited about where she'll take them.
I think one of the things you need to do is you need to model the behavior you want to see in your students. And that's so important. I mean, you know, it's great to give speeches, but unless you walk the talk, it doesn't matter.
Well, President Margaret McKenna, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much, and we wish you the very best of luck with all that you can do and will do here at Suffolk. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed it as well.
Margaret McKenna took the helm at Suffolk University last month. We spoke to her at her office, which, as we said, overlooks the Golden Dome of the Massachusetts State House. There's more ahead. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.